Remington Aidney Campbell, and this is the History of Musical Theatre podcast. Where do you begin with the legacy of Oklahoma? How about the Tony Awards? Now, for those of you who don't know, the Tony Awards are essentially the Oscars of New York theatre. Oklahoma didn't win the Tony Award for Best Musical. This isn't a major snub, though. Don't go writing, I don't know, the Tony Awards committee, a la 1943. Best Musical didn't exist as a category. It didn't exist until 1948, when Kiss Me, Kate would win. So why am I talking about the Tony Awards? Heck, I don't think the Tony Awards existed at this time. It is my own personal opinion. A hypothesis, so to say, backed by the vibes I got researching this show, that the Best Musical Award wouldn't have come to be without Oklahoma. It wouldn't have come to be in the same time frame. It needed a musical to go out and prove musicals can be art. I don't think Best Musical would have existed without Oklahoma and the wave of integrated musicals which followed it. I mean, Kiss Me, Kate is a pretty well-integrated show. I mean, integrated for a Cole Porter show. You may remember that Cole Porter is the main man of musical comedies. This brings me pretty neatly into the next part. What is the legacy of Oklahoma? Integrated musicals. Isn't that what we're all here talking about? Or I guess it's just me. It's just me talking about it. This change happened in a couple of ways. I mean, firstly, Rodgers and Hammerstein wrote a lot of shows, about one every 2 years. Following Oklahoma, there was 1945's Carousel, 1947's Allegro, 1949's South Pacific, 1951's The King and I, 1953's Me and Juliet, 1958's Flower Drum Song, and 1959's The Sound of Music. Also, they wrote a few movies and made-for-TV movies that then got stage adaptations. The 1945 movie State Fair got its stage adaptation in 1996. And 1957's made-for-TV Cinderella, which starred Julie Andrews, just saying, received a 1958 pantomime stage adaptation, and then the 2013 Broadway adaptation, as well as, like, a couple of other made-for-TV movies. This last one, Cinderella, was pretty impressive. The book Something Wonderful begins with the story of Rodgers and Hammerstein's made-for-TV Cinderella. The streets were empty. Cities turned into ghost towns because everyone was inside watching this new film. The shows the pair wrote that made this change. They also worked as producers, producing shows that became more and more integrated. While Annie Get Your Gun is not the pinnacle of integrated musicals, it's definitely more integrated than a lot of the shows that came before it. Also one of the shows you'd have to do the most legwork to make presentable in the modern day. It has two exceptionally famous songs, and two less famous, somewhat tasteless plot points. As well as Rodgers and Hammerstein's own shows and the shows they produced, other people started to take notice. I mean, if you have a musical that is a smash hit and changes everyone's expectations of what a musical would look like, you'd think that other people writing in this space would make some changes. Not everyone went straight from writing Anything Goes to writing Kiss Me, Kate. More Cole Porter references. But bit by bit, musicals got more and more integrated. The idea of songs progressing the plot became normal. Back to some more direct influences. In episode 4, I spoke about the Hammersteinesty, a word I coined because I think it's hilarious. Now, I want to bring your attention to something a little bigger. The Rodgers and Hammersteinesty. There are generations of musical writers who came after these luminaries. To To point this out, I would like to return to the 1960 Tony Awards. The Sound of Music and Fiorello were tied for Best Musical in, I believe, the only time that's ever happened. But there were two other shows nominated that I want to talk about. Gypsy by Stephen Sondheim and Once Upon a Mattress by Mary Rodgers. For Stephen Sondheim, Oscar Hammerstein II was a mentor and a lyric writing coach and also a surrogate father figure. If you're not up on your musical theatre history, then first, hi, you're in the right place. And secondly, Stephen Sondheim is a big deal in musical theatre. He was the lyricist on West Side Story, as well as writing Sweeney Todd, Into the Woods, Company, Merrily We Roll Along, and of course, Gypsy. He's known for his intelligent rhymes and nuanced lyrics and layered vocal parts. It's not a Sondheim show if a couple of people aren't singing totally different lyrics over the top of each other. The other show was Once Upon a Mattress. Now, for those of you who are wondering, yes, Mary Rodgers is that Rodgers. She is the daughter of Richard Rodgers. She also had a son who got into writing musicals, Adam Gatell, who is best known for the show The Light in the Piazza. An amazing little bit of trivia is that the novella that that show is based off, which has the same title, was kind of passed down from family member to family member as something someone should adapt. Apparently Oscar Hammerstein was thinking of adapting it, and then Mary Rodgers was thinking of adapting it, and then finally, Adam Gatell wrote this absolutely beautiful show. '60 wasn't all good, though. It was also the year that Oscar Hammerstein died from stomach cancer, only a few months after the opening of The Sound of Music. Lights on Broadway and in the West End were dimmed, and for the 1965 film adaptation of the pair's final musical, Rodgers wrote both the lyrics and the music for the additional songs. Rodgers continued writing musicals, including Do I Hear a Waltz, with Hammerstein's protégé, Stephen Sondheim. For the first time in his life, Rodgers did a Hammerstein and wrote with a lot of different writing partners. In 1979, Rodgers died from a combination of jaw cancer, a heart attack, and a laryngectomy. Just to pull us all out of that sad, let's talk about one of the most joyous art forms, I think, that exists, dance. The impact Oklahoma made on dance is not to be understated. Agnes DeMille was part of the movement which made dance into an art form rather than a sideshow, and which removed ballet from being the exclusive domain of the Russians. In the years that it ran, Oklahoma was a magnet in the dance world, drawing people in. In her autobiography, No Daughter of Mine is Going to Be a Dancer, something Agnes DeMille could have titled her own autobiography but didn't, Shari Traver Underwood described the constant specter of Oklahoma for dancers across the country. As she trained and danced multiple seasons at Jacob's Pillow, more and more dancers were pulled to New York to audition. She ended up auditioning unsuccessfully for Oklahoma, but did end up on tour in another Agnes DeMille show, Bloomer Girl. My earliest research into the next season, Keen, revealed even more influence both personally and more broadly. In his autobiography Twinkle Toes, Gene Gavin wrote, "We finished our New York City visit with our first Broadway show, Oklahoma. When we left on the train, I was already planning my next trip to New York. I had been bitten by the Manhattan bug. With the impetus of Oklahoma, I decided the quickest way into the theater was through dancing." He goes on to describe the ubiquitousness of ballet on Broadway, as well as seeing Agnes DeMille take class. Robert Emmett Long, on his book on director choreographers, credits Agnes DeMille as the precursor to the coming generation of, you know, director choreographers. The book talks about people like Jerome Robbins and Bob Fosse and Tommy Tune. Agnes's developments in the area of dance, particularly musical theatre dance, should not be understated. Agnes's own career as a choreographer, though, was not stellar. Its peak was about 5 years. After Allegro, she had a falling out with Richard Rodgers and no longer worked on their projects. He blamed her for the show's failures. Although historians disagree. Work on Broadway dried up as the industry moved more towards jazz. The industry was moved by Agnes DeMille, and then it moved past her. Agnes did have a successful second career as a writer, completing a number of autobiographies and memoirs, Dance the Piper and Promenade Home, as well as biographies of other dance professionals like Martha Graham and books on choreography. She also did a lecture and dance tour with a troupe of dancers. I am a particular fan of her book Reprieve, which speaks about the process of recovering from a stroke which left half her body paralyzed. The final part of the legacy that I want to talk about is this show. You did it, Oklahoma. You've made it to the prestigious point of having someone start a podcast about you. This is better than a Tony Award or a sold-out opening night. Right, guys? Right? I know. Equally as prestigious as having changed the entire theatre industry is me hiding under my stairs from planes and noisy people standing outside recording a podcast. I got to the end of that line and the people standing outside just burst out laughing. Do you think they're fans? But Oklahoma is now pretty important to me because it launched this series. And now I'm very excited to announce the next season, West Side Story, which will be debuting on the 2nd of August. Until then, something's coming, and it's gonna be great. If you have any feedback on the show, I would love to hear it. Positive or constructive. This first season was produced entirely by me with a really low budget and a kind of hectic schedule. So I'd love to know what worked, what didn't work, and the ways you think I can improve. Yeah. If you'd like to share comments with me, either comment them where you found this podcast or send me an email at outofthewingsmedia@gmail.com.